You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis, and today, a happier story about COVID-19 and getting the vaccine. People over the age of 65 are now eligible for vaccination, as you know, and in LA County, so far, more than 600,000 seniors have gotten at least one shot. They're among the lucky ones. As KCRW has reported, some older folks have had a terribly hard time booking an appointment. There are language barriers, transportation issues, but the biggest problem has been the digital divide. No internet? For a lot of people, that means no shot. Unless you've got a friend, a family member, a digital guide.
Hey, maybe you'll get a discount.
Yeah. A pharmacy discount.
I think it's free.
Yeah.
Today on Greater LA, the story of one man, one appointment, and one pair of helping hands. A first-person story from KCRW's Catherine Barnes and her landlord.
My name is Payne K. Green, and I'm headed to Goleta Valley Sampson Medical Clinic to have a COVID-19 vaccination.
My landlord, Payne, calls the virus COVID-19. I'm not sure why, but it's too cute to correct him.
Well, I have lived in Santa Barbara all my life. I am a native, and I will be my next birthday, which is the 17th of May. I'll be 89.
My boyfriend and I have lived in a studio apartment above Payne's garage for 6 years. He's one of those rare, amazing landlords. He leaves us bags of hand-picked avocados outside our door. He quickly agreed when we asked if we could adopt a dog. And every December, he gives us a Christmas card with two $50 bills in it that reads, "To my adopted children." Payne lives alone. His wife died 15 years ago. His son also passed away, tragically young. And his daughter lives hours south in Long Beach. He doesn't own a computer. And before I helped him get a vaccination appointment, here's what he went through.
People asked me if I had received the shot yet, and I said no. So what I did was I called my regular HMO doctor, his office, and they said that they would get back to me. And 2 days later, I received a notice in the mail. It said that there was two numbers to call to set up an appointment to have the shot. Well, when I called that number, they said they'll put me on the list, and the only shots they know that will be available would be in April. And April?
April, for an 88-year-old with lung issues?
And so Catherine Barnes, who is my tenant, heard on the news where shots were being given, and she called, and she notified me, and I said, yes, well, go ahead.
Actually, I didn't hear it on the news, and I didn't call. When he told me his troubles outside in the driveway one evening last month, I got mad, frustrated at the system. So the next morning, I logged into my computer and booked him an appointment myself, just like that. Why couldn't the person who was on the phone with Payne have done that? When the day came, I double-masked, opened all my car windows for a strong breeze, and drove Payne to get his first shot.
Hi.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Okay.
We have a 4 o'clock appointment.
Oh, look at that, with the police badge and everything. Thank you for your service, sir.
Payne's a retired police officer, and he flashes his badge whenever he gets the chance.
Thank you.
So you guys come on, turn in. My friend Michael in orange will tell you where to go.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Well, are you ready for your vaccine?
Freddie is always
Let's
ready.
Let's do it. Okay, my dear. Just relax that arm. Little poke. One, two. Boop. So this is a little reminder that your second appointment should be within the next 3 to 6 weeks. They'll reach out to you usually by email, letting you know when you can sign up.
Here we go again with the email. He's 88 years old. Why can't they call? 3 weeks go by, and I start to get concerned. At this point, Santa Barbara has opened vaccine eligibility to people 65 years and older, to teachers, to people in the food industry. My 30-something friend who works at a craft brewery gets his first shot. That's all great, but where is Payne's second? Thankfully, 3.5 weeks later, that email does arrive in my inbox. I book a second appointment immediately for March 4th. Noon is the only available time. Good thing my boss is flexible.
Hi.
Hi, afternoon.
Hey.
My name is Dr. Warren. Nice to meet you.
Okay.
How are you feeling today?
With both hands. Okay. Just kidding.
Yeah, well, you're going to get the shot, right?
My second one, yeah.
Oh, it's your second one today. Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Any questions?
Am I supposed to have how many shots?
Two. Yeah, this is the last one you get, but still wear your mask and still social distance. Act like you haven't gotten the shot.
Uh-huh.
Stay protected.
Oh, okay.
Take your ID and your insurance card.
Payne's life won't change in extraordinary ways now that he's fully vaccinated. His days were pretty solitary before the pandemic. He'll still have to wear a mask when he goes to the 99-cent store for his groceries. He's never gone on a vacation since I've known him. And his regular meetups with Santa Barbara High School alum are still postponed. But he does feel protected, more protected than his childhood friend Conrad, who died in January from COVID-19.
The last time I saw him was 2 weeks before I found somebody called me and told me he had passed away. And he was fine. And when I talked to his wife, she said it happened so suddenly that they admitted him to the hospital. Nobody could get close to him, not even relatives could visit.
Payne says he doesn't want his life to end that way.
I hope it's with old age. And not something that just happens overnight.
COVID rates are dropping, but at his age, it wouldn't take much for the virus to do a lot of damage. And I can't help but think that without someone to book these appointments for him, Payne would still be unvaccinated right now. And how many others like him may need a tenant or a neighbor or just someone who knows them to help make the process a little faster and smoother. For KCRW, I'm Catherine Barnes.
Winter, spring, summer, or fall. Now all you got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got a friend.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. In the early days of the pandemic, LA County took a number of emergency actions to help curb the spread of COVID-19 in the criminal justice system. It swiftly moved to reduce jail populations. California's Judicial Council implemented temporary zero bail statewide for misdemeanor and low-level felonies. And remember, back then, many courts were closed as well. Well, now, nearly a year later, there's a new report from students at UCLA's School of Law. They actually found that quite a few folks inside LA jails endured unnecessarily long stays during the COVID pandemic. Unnecessary being the key word here. Missing court hearings and appearances that could have led to getting out or maybe even a plea deal with prosecutors. How'd they miss those hearings? Well, one reason is the use of lockdowns. A lot of them billed as quarantines. Chris Gilardi reported on these new findings and what's going on inside LA jails for The Intercept. Hey, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And Gabriel Lopez is one of the inmates who endured the lockdowns and missed appearances, court appearances, spoke to Chris for his piece in The Intercept. Hey, Gabriel, thanks for coming on.
Oh, I'm very glad to be here. Thank you for having me here.
I want to start with you, Gabriel, because you were in jail for a few months.
Yes.
Early on in the pandemic, this dates back to April, nearly a year ago. We mm-hmm. didn't know a lot about COVID in those early days. You're in jail. You've got all these other men around you. It's certainly, there's no social distancing inside Men's Central, right?
No, not at all. We were literally like four people to a 6x12. So, and we're all sleeping like kind of on top of each other, and not even the space at every corner could keep us 6 feet away. It's just so close. And then we're all using one toilet. We're all drinking from one water fountain. We're all sharing one bowl for cereal and stuff. It was just, there's no such thing as social distancing or protecting yourself from a virus in there.
Well, what was going through your mind while you're hearing about all this happening and you're around all these people knowing that you can't stay away from them, that you're all in this shared enclosed space?
Well, I literally kept a shirt on my face all day. I really wasn't trying to catch it because I did not want to test the waters. I did not want to see if my system could put up with it or fight it. I really didn't want to catch it. So I was like fearful to catch it.
And inside the jail, there were lockdowns, right? There were quarantines, but they called them lockdowns.
Yes.
So it's like we have to separate, we have to isolate people or quarantine people, you know, who may have been exposed or who are COVID positive.
Yeah, well, the thing was that we were getting people that hadn't got their test results yet. They were tossing them in with general population, and then like 2 days later, they would pop up positive. So they'll be like, okay, you guys are quarantined. Boom. We're quarantined for 15 days. Then 13 days later, they will bring another set of inmates without getting their test results and put them in there with us again. And then 2-3 days later, boom, oh, you guys are still on quarantined. And it went on for just a long time. Like, I did 5 months in jail. And basically the whole time I was quarantined. And it was just awful because that wasn't the only thing that we experienced. You know, I mean, it sucks to be locked down in a room where you can't move, breathe, or do anything. It's just really awful. That's as bad as that is. Now to have other people there that need treatment, like people with diabetes and hernias and stuff like that, they weren't getting their treatment because of the COVID. You know, they were seeking treatment and they just wouldn't do it because they couldn't get close or it was against the protocol at that time.
When you say you were quarantined, you couldn't go to a court appearance. You couldn't go to a bail hearing. You couldn't talk to your attorney. Is that what was going on?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I missed court literally like 7 times because we just kept getting quarantined repeatedly. Like, you know, one time we did get off of quarantine for 1 day, and which, since we're inmate workers, they had us all like, you know, for that 1 day, they had us like catch up on passing out food, cleaning clothes, taking clothing out and folding everything. You know, they had us do that for 1 day while we were quarantined, and then they were slammed down again. And at that same time, they brought more people that were sick and haven't had the results. And then boom, another 15 days. It was just awful.
Chris Gilardi, in your reporting, you found that what was happening to Gabriel, I mean, he missed 7, is what he just said, 7 appearances. It wasn't an isolated experience, right? There are a lot of folks inside Men's Central or any jail. They're waiting on a trial. They're waiting on a court appearance or a hearing or a meeting with a lawyer, whatever it may be, right?
Yeah. It's a super pervasive problem, even now. You know, people are, like Gabriel said, people are always being quarantined. I looked at some Sheriff's Department data, and even like at one point in early June, 49% of the jail population, that's all the jails, was under quarantine. And you already mentioned the report put out by some UCLA School of Law students. They conducted a survey along with some law firms, and about 64% of the people who responded to that said that they had missed court dates because of COVID. And that jumped up to 80% where you're just talking about people being held pretrial. And those are people who haven't been convicted yet. And those are the people most likely to win release if they get to a court appearance. And so, yeah, it was a really pervasive problem.
So this is like a ripple effect, right, on the entire criminal justice system. It's if you know, obviously, if you can't make a court date, you're not likely to be released. You're not going to be able to get a plea deal done with a prosecutor if that's what you choose to do. I mean, this is just, you're just stuck.
Yes. I actually didn't get my plea deal till a month till I got out. So after 4 months of being in there wondering what's going to happen to me or how's my case going to go, I finally got a plea deal like a month before I got out.
And if I may ask, Gabriel, I mean, what sort of toll do you think that had on you emotionally and even physically? You got COVID, right?
Yeah, I actually caught it and I had awful symptoms, which I lost my taste, my smell. I had shortness of breath. I had the chills and I almost thought I was going to die in there. And I was actually really in distress because of just feeling that you're trapped. You know, you kind of start feeling like, damn, what is this life worth? Like, has life really came to this? And it's awful. It's really awful.
Chris, L.A. County jails are run by the Sheriff's Department. That is different from prison, right?
Right, yeah. I think that's a great point. You know, this quarantine issue, the constant exposure issue can affect people inside the jails in, like, a lot of ways. Like, I was talking to some public defenders, and they were complaining about how they're trying to cut deals with prosecutors to get people, get clients with like mental health problems or drug addictions diverted into treatment programs, you know, which would help them get out of jail and get some help. But they can't get them into court because of quarantine, or they can't get a doctor to evaluate them, which the court mandates because they're in quarantine, and they just sit in jail. We've been dealing with COVID for a year now, and one thing that's always been super clear is that the pandemic, it exacerbates inequities and injustices, and the criminal legal system is full of that. You know, it's bureaucratic, it's complicated, and it's frustrating. And, you know, the constant quarantines because of repeated COVID exposure just exacerbate that. And people sit in jail in crappy conditions, and they stay sick because of it.
What was your sense of how LASD, the Sheriff's Department, has been managing the jail since the beginning? And when you reached out to them for comment, what did they have to say?
Well, I listed a lot of the issues that Gabriel brought up, you know, taking trustees out of quarantine to do work, putting people in general population without getting their test results back. And a lot of just what they had to say was that they're not aware that this is happening, that this probably wouldn't happen under their policies. So I don't really think they're taking full account of the full extent of the issue. And they like to point out the fact that early on in COVID, like in the spring, the jail population, because of county policies, they decarcerated very quickly from, like you said in the beginning, they decarcerated from 17,000 people in the jails to about 12,000. But that still doesn't mean that the jails aren't crowded, because the state rated capacity for the LA County jail system is about 12,400, and they've just been running overcrowded for decades. So the numbers don't really tell the whole story. And like Gabriel said, it's really bad in there. And it doesn't seem like they're taking full account of the issue.
Chris Gilardi, journalist based out of New York City. Gabriel Lopez, he's a roofer. He's a professional fighter who hails from Pasadena. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you guys, and stay safe. And this COVID-19 stuff, it's not a joke. You know, we really need to be careful.
As of this week, more than 22,000 Angelenos have died from COVID-19. The destruction from the pandemic is deeply personal. So this week on Greater LA, we've been taking you beyond the statistics to bring you short stories about people in Southern California lost to the pandemic, as remembered by those who loved them. Today, the matriarch of a San Gabriel Valley family who assimilated into a community far, far away from her ancestral home. Kuei Ching Chen was 70 years old. This is Nancy Chen and Nancy's husband, David Davis, remembering their mom.
My mom's name is Kuei Ching Chen. We are Taiwanese Chinese. You know, she immigrated to the United States with three kids, with my dad and three little kids at that time. So my parents were very involved in
the grandkids' lives. We had and have jobs, but my parents have cared every single one of them. Every single one of their grandkids they helped raise. She would pick them up and would care for them, feed them, make sure their homework was done until we picked them up in the evening, late evening when we got home from work.
I'll tell you a story. Nancy's mom took our son. We have a son who's 11. And when he was 3, she took him to Taiwan for 6 weeks. We barely could speak with them for 6 weeks. And when they came back, he was fluent in Mandarin, but had forgotten his English completely. So it took him like another 6 months to remember all his English.
I had to interpret between our son and his dad because he couldn't speak English anymore.
So the grandchildren have all were so bonded with Ama. They
think she's the smartest one in the family. If they had to prioritize, they've given us a list before. She is their number one everything. She's at the top of the list when it comes to like the best person, the best cook, the best, you know, whatever category that she would fit into. She's like number one for them. Her main thing was being compassionate. I think she had a hard time saying no. She made friends, like deep bonds with her friends because she was always helping people. You know, if you needed her help, she would extend her support and made you feel as though you were part of the family. You know, she was very careful, like we all were when we first, we just didn't understand the pandemic, so she stayed home for the most part. She had a tenant living with her at that time who did not believe the severity of the illness. He kind of thought that this was all media hype, and then he got sick. And that's how my mom contracted COVID. She was in the hospital for 2 months fighting COVID. We all believed that not a day where I actually thought she was not going to come home until the very end. She actually finally tested negative for COVID and was moved out of a ICU COVID ward. So not being in a COVID ward allowed us access to see her 4 hours a day, every day, one person. And so we were so excited about that, like planning, just, you know, like trying to coordinate a schedule, fighting about it. No, I get to see mom. You get to, you know, all of that. It was like exciting. We were super excited to be able to see her again and sit by her bedside because that's the amount of care and love she gave us her entire life. And so it was only appropriate that we call the hospital every day, multiple times a day, and FaceTime her every day to make sure she got the care that she gave us and our family. But because of complications, shortly after the transfer from the COVID ICU ward, she passed. What's worked for me has been focusing on her legacy. And, you know, it just mattered to her that she, on a singular level, lived her life being true to her faith and showing us the love that she did. And for us, that's enough. That was her purpose in life, and she fulfilled it exceptionally.
Nancy Chen and her husband David Davis talking about Nancy's 70-year-old mother, Kuei Ching Chen, who died of COVID-19 complications back in November. Special thanks to KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo, who produced that tribute today. That's it for this evening. Tomorrow, opening up slowly in L.A. County. You could be dining inside, if of course you choose, very soon. Is it too soon? What do you think about that? Tell us at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. And by the way, while you're there, share your post-vaccine story with us, too. If you've had the shot, do you feel safer? What are you doing now that you haven't been able to do for the last year? You can also subscribe to the podcast, too, while you're there at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geist, PJ Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Mike Newport, Amy Ta, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all made today's show happen. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your time and ears this evening. Have yourself a great night.